Hey, gang.
Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. Today
is Monday, and Monday is the day where, as soon as I get done shilling for shekels for RBN, go to the republicbroadcasting.org and click on the donate button and send them. And as soon as I get done shilling for the Co-Certified app, which is great, go to nationalbugle.com and download it. Then I introduce Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Patrick, and have you stopped shilling for Donald Trump as well?
I know, because I advertise myself as the internet's biggest shill for Donald Trump, and you know, largely I have, but I do say this: rather than getting mad at Donald Trump for being the shill or betraying us, I say that he lost. That at least for a while, I mean, I don't think he's the person who has the best intentions all along. But I think during his campaign and his inauguration, I think he thought, okay, maybe I can make America great again, and I'll go down as a historic figure for that. I think he actually wanted to, and I think he played chess, and I think he lost. I don't think he's a good chess player. I think the progressives and the left were happier having the neocons take over the Trump administration than working with Donald Trump themselves for issues of common concern, such as ending foreign wars. And so my thing is, let's call this the coup d'etat, the Jewish coup d'etat, use it as a red pill. There's no point in just getting normies mad at Donald Trump. If this is not going to be an educational experience, then it's a complete and utter defeat. But if at least we can red pill people, educate people that this is what happens when you have Jewish power. And it wasn't just Donald Trump being bad, but it was him losing. And who was he losing to? He was losing to this Jewish power of the media, Jewish power of the Mueller probe, you know, the deep state. Then we still get something out of it. That's my position.
That's a good position. And I've got to say that, obviously, I was joking. And I wasn't sort of opening the show with some bold attack on you or anything.
No.
I do actually believe that you're very, very right. And joking aside, I don't think that we always have to get some great leader. Sometimes you can get a candidate in who does things for you that might not be 100% of what you want, but it can be enough of what you want to make that endeavor worthwhile.
And if I could interrupt for just a second, that's Donald Trump's theme song at all his rallies. At the end of the rally, it's the Rolling Stones, "You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need."
Well, this is the thing, and I've got to say this. When I saw Donald Trump tweet out rather explicitly of the week, "The mainstream media are the enemy of the people," that for me said a lot. And whatever happens with Trump from here on in, whatever happens from here on in until, you know, these next round of elections, I have to say that ultimately, having a US president who is still saying the things he's saying, still attacking the media, still undermining the media, undermining the power that has dogged us for so long, will ultimately help us. And whilst he's still doing good things like that, I can't fully turn against him. Yes, mm-hmm. He's cucked on so many things, mm-hmm. but he's still been a net positive, and he's still been better than Hillary, and he's still done more to undermine the traditional political media establishment and deep state than any other president or prime minister or world leader post-World War II. And for all of that, we have to be thankful for him. Because we can all be purists. We can all say, well, this is not exactly what I wanted. This isn't exactly what I hoped for. This isn't exactly how I wanted things to turn out. But having things turn out exactly as you wished can sometimes be a tough call. It can sometimes be something that you're never, ever going to get. And to be fair, we have to be pragmatists. We've still ended up with more positives out of the Trump administration than we have negatives. And for that, and let's face it, it's very easy. I think there's plenty of people in this movement who are very, for want of a better phrase, black-pilled. They're very depressing. They're very negative. And they love to seize upon any form of negativity. So Trump does something wrong, and they're all up in, oh, we told you so. I knew he was a Zio shill from the beginning. Ah, we should have never voted for him. This is the worst thing ever. And I understand that Donald Trump should certainly be criticised. And I've criticised Donald Trump. I've made a whole video criticising him when he bombed Syria. But what I've got to say is, these people who are constantly saying, well, this is terrible, that's terrible, there's no hope, you know, this has been a betrayal, that you can't take anything good from this. After a while, that gets depressing. It puts people off. There has to be some positives. And in this case, there's plenty of positives. And I can't be one of these people that doesn't point out those positives. I can't be one of these people that keeps constantly looking for negatives all of the time. You know, of course we have to be honest, but being honest means pointing out both the good and the bad. I mean, even with a government like the Labour government in the UK, I can think of one thing they did that I approved of. They initiated a smoking ban in restaurants. Well, that for me was absolutely fantastic. I used to hate going into restaurants and having to sit next to some complete idiot who would finish his meal, light up a cigarette or a cigar, and blow smoke in my face. It was absolutely disgusting. In fact, I remember one night I went out for a meal with a girlfriend, and we sat eating our meal while some complete jackass lit up the biggest cigar you could ever imagine, and every time he exhaled, he turned in our direction so he didn't blow the smoke in his own date's face. So he wasn't blowing his smoke on his own partner. He was blowing it all over myself, my partner, and our food. And what can you do? Absolutely disgusting. Now, that was a terrible government. The Labour government was an absolutely astonishingly bad government. They flooded the country with migrants. They took us into wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. They were a disaster for the UK. We had unprecedented borrowing. We had the consumer credit bust. And all of these things were very bad for the UK, but they did that one good thing. And I think Trump has given us a lot more than one good thing. And he continues to deliver on several of the most important things that we as a organizational movement have always pushed for. And one of those things is the dismantling and the discrediting of the mainstream media. And if he just keeps doing that one thing alone, that will always be something that we should be eternally grateful to Donald Trump for.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, and that's a big deal, and we do lose sight of things because we are disappointed, but there are going to be some positives that come out of this administration, and it's not over, and we should continue to struggle. And I've always said he's not a political leader, he's a political asset, and right now he's in the hands of our enemies, but we might be able to get him back. I don't know, maybe. And listening to, I guess it was the Tedious Show with Mike Enoch, and he was making a point, more or less, that, you know, just to say, oh, I predicted this, he, you know, you were stupid to vote for Trump, I predicted this. I don't know if he was saying it exactly like that, but he called it something like, it's a defeatist cope, it's a cope. You know, well, okay, you get the, you know, by saying that, maybe you get a little bit of pleasure or vindication, but it does absolutely no good. Just to say you predicted it, you know, some people actually worked hard and tried to get something done, and you know, at the end of the day, you lose the game. Well, just to say, ah, I predicted it, you were going to lose all along. What good does that do? I want to get on now to Brexit. Andrew Carrington Hitchcock had a show today. He invited me on in the morning, and he played, it was more than 30 times, 31 or 37 instances of Theresa May saying that we are going to leave the EU on March 29th. And she said it over and over and over again. And it was really tedious listening to that. What happened with that? Did you all leave the EU on March 29th?
Well, on March the 29th, I was flying into Stockholm.
Which I want to ask you about later.
Yeah, for a conference. It was fantastic, actually. And I was meant to be arriving there as a non-EU citizen, as someone from the UK. We were meant to have left. But I walked through the gate on March the 29th into the EU passports only section as an EU citizen, as an EU citizen. And when I stood on stage to deliver my speech, I said that. I said, I'm here as an EU citizen. And that was that. It was basically another day. I mean, there was huge protests in London. There was tens of thousands of people who went to London to protest against what has happened. But other than that, life continued on as normal. And the date for exiting the EU that had been repeatedly promised by Theresa May was broken. And now we are looking at a situation where we don't know. An extension was agreed till April the 12th. Well, we're on April the 1st today. So apparently we're leaving in 11 days, but I can't see that myself. I don't think we're...
Well, are you going to vote in the EU elections?
Well, that's another thing. Are we going to vote in the EU elections? I don't believe we will be voting in the EU elections because we're meant to be leaving. But if we don't vote in the EU elections and we don't leave, we've really got the worst of both worlds. We'll be paying all those taxes. We'll be bound by their laws, their red tape, their bureaucracy. But we won't have any say in how that bureaucracy, that red tape is run. And I know we don't get a huge amount of say because most of the MEPs are completely powerless. Essentially, European Parliament is dictated to by a small group of people who sit above the Parliament and almost have all the say. And throw
is that the European Commission? What is that?
Well, you have a European. Essentially, you have a European president of sorts that is virtually unelected, and there is a sort of a ruling body above the Parliament that passes things down that the Parliament can vote on. But really, essentially, the Parliament is just. It's just there. It's a sort of a facade. It's there to make it look like it's a democratic institution, when in fact it isn't at all. And I think it would be very, very, very bad if we don't end up voting people into the European Parliament. Despite it being a facade, we still need to have people there. There have still been certain moments in European Parliament where decent people have stood up and made a stand and made very powerful speeches. And if we don't have any access to European Parliament, but we are still in the EU, that would be an absolutely scandalous and ridiculous situation. But in a way, that would probably please the Europhiles even more than the current situation, because ultimately, these Remainers, these Europhiles, want us to be part of this dictatorial bloc, and they don't seem to want us to have any form of democratic power within it, and they certainly don't want to see us having the chance to vote our way out of it. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've seen idiots online say things like, this is an example of there being too much democracy.
Mm-hmm. So, Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, the leader of the opposition in Parliament, he's calling for new elections. What are the prospects of new elections? What are the prospects of Theresa May and, you know, the Tories just setting up a new prime minister, her resigning and a new prime minister coming in without elections? If there were and if there were elections, what would be the chances of an explicitly Remain candidate winning the elections and just keeping Britain in the, you know, and just therefore nullifying the Brexit vote in the first place?
Well, I'm not sure about that. At the moment, Parliament seems to be sort of reorientating itself. There is the Conservative Party, which is split down the middle. There are Remainers and there are Leavers. And then there is the Labour Party, run by Jeremy Corbyn, which is largely speaking a party that now wants to push for some sort of second vote or very soft Brexit at the least. But there's also an independent group that has been formed. And you can see at the moment that Parliament is starting to reorganise itself. You're seeing a breakaway from the two major parties. However, the polls are putting, today, the polls have put Jeremy Corbyn ahead with a four-point lead. So we could well see an incoming Labour government. We could well see a government that was absolutely disastrous for the UK, that foisted a second referendum upon us. And if we saw that, I think that would have a very profound effect, because it would send a real message to people, more so than already has been done, that there is no democracy, that people can't vote their way out. And I think it could well lead to violence.
If there were a second referendum, what do you think the result would be?
I can't say. I think it would be very nasty. I think it would be far more acrimonious than the first. I think there would likely be violence at street stalls. I think there would likely, especially violence from Remainers to Leavers, if people did stalls in the street, I think there would likely be attacks on people. I think there would be violence.
When you say stalls in the street, that means people setting up like little temporary tables and whatnot to distribute
literature.
Yeah, and
I think there would be fights. I think there would be violence at those stalls. I think people would stand there in the street trying to sign people up, trying to give people more information, trying to campaign. And I think because of the acrimonious feelings between both camps, I think this time, the first time, things were done in sort of reasonably good sort of with a good feeling. I think you know, people would stand at a Remain stall opposite a Leave stall, and people would, you know, they would generally do it with a, you know, good heart and a reasonable amount of good feelings towards the other side. But I think this time it'd be totally different.
And do you think the pro EU Remainers are more violent?
Yeah, I think they have shown themselves to be very violent. They've shown themselves to want to lash out, and I believe they would lash out. I think if they saw stalls promoting Leave a second time around, I think you would see people come over, push over stalls, potentially throw things at people, maybe physically assault people, jump on top of them, try to steal their literature. I think there would be that sense of violence and sort of confrontation and bad feeling. It would all be there, because the Remainers, the first time around, the Remainers were so convinced that they were going to win, they kind of treated the people who were campaigning to leave a little bit like you treat a child doing something silly, just in a little bit of a contemptuous way. Oh, let them get on with it. Let them have their little stall, and once the vote's out of the way, it'll all be put to bed, and they can go back to grumbling in the back rooms of pubs about how they want their little England back. And they treated us like that, with a little bit of contempt. But I think now we've won, their attitude has been completely different. Their hatred for us now is spilling out. For example, one of my friends had large placards in his garden. When I say large, they were massive. They were 3-metre by 2-metre boards in his garden. And every day, a guy that he knows on his street drove past and sort of shook his head if he saw him outside in his garden by these big placards. But the morning when the result came in, he drove past and stuck his middle finger up and sped away, because his attitude before was like, oh, those silly placards. His attitude after we won was very different.
Okay, well, we're about to go on.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. This product is superb. I have been taking it for about a year now, and I can feel my cardiovascular system run like a Swiss watch. I definitely recommend this product for anyone that has high cholesterol, high blood pressure, and heart palpitations, A+. It's potent, but it works. I have been waking up for the past 3 years with numb hands, and a week into using Extendivite, my numb hands seem to have cleared up. My circulation was off, and now it's back on track. So I'm happy. I feel so energized, and I have my husband on it now. My mother-in-law has cholesterol problems, so I bought her a bottle as well. Thank you so much. Love the product. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And we are back. So, Mark, you entered Stockholm Airport as an EU citizen. What were you doing in Stockholm?
Well, I was going there to make a speech at the Skanza Forum in Sweden, which is run by an excellent gentleman called Frode Midjord. Mm-hmm. He's doing a superb job. And I've got to say that when I arrived for this conference in Sweden, it was one of the most positive events I have ever been to.
What is Skanza?
It's the Scandinavian Forum. Essentially, it is a forum that takes place in Finland, Norway, Denmark, and Sweden. They travel around holding these meetings. People from all over Europe speak at them. People from all over Europe are welcome. And it is a way to get together Scandinavian nationalists from all of the Scandinavian nations who want to stand up for white well-being and preserve the integrity of the indigenous Scandinavian people.
Okay. So what did you specifically talk about in your speech?
Well, the whole conference was centered around anarcho-tyranny. It was centered around the idea that multiculturalism brings about anarchy, that the politicians bring in people from all over the world who don't really get on with us. They have very different cultures and traditions. And the reason their cultures and traditions are very different to ours is because their values are often diametrically opposed to our values. And when you have different groups of people with different cultures and traditions and with very, very different value systems, they tend to want to separate. But if they can't separate, if they're forced to live in one confined area, those people tend to vie for power, they vie for control, they attempt to get one over on each other. And when this happens in Western nations, that is very, very bad for the indigenous people, for people of European descent, because not only are these migrants, these newcomers, trying to get a bigger slice of the pie for their community and exert control over our community in order to win this culture war, they actually have a lot of help, because Western governments, the police force, the establishment help them. And this creates a problem, because our people then get repressed. And out of this anarchy that comes from the terrorism, the grooming, the sexual assaults, the attacks on white youth, the essentially the war on our people that's perpetuated by these migrants, out of that anarchy, the government essentially pushes for new laws. And these new laws are the tyranny of the anarcho-tyranny that we spoke of earlier. And this tyranny is not a tyranny that, well, it's a tyranny because it is used against us. It's not used against the people perpetuating the terrorism. For example, when Muslims in the UK perpetuate terrorist attacks or carry out terrorist attacks, the government then passes new laws that give them sweeping powers to snoop on us, to listen to what we say, to watch and keep tabs on what we look up on
you and not the grooming gangs. Is that?
Yeah, and they use those laws against us. And sometimes well-meaning Western folk, you know, think these laws are a great idea. You know, if you pass these laws, if we start monitoring what everyone says on their phones, we can monitor these terrorists. But they're not monitoring the Muslims. They're not monitoring the would-be terrorists. They monitor people who speak out against terrorists, who speak out against mass migration, who speak out against grooming gangs. And these laws are then tyrannical because they actually are enforced in a way that prevents us from fighting back against our own extinction. So, sorry to interrupt,
but in a way it sounds like another 9/11.
Well, yes. Yes, indeed. And I believe that you have something similar over there called the Patriot Act. Now, the Patriot Act sounds wonderful. I mean, I believe it's meant to sound wonderful. It's meant to sound something like something that you'd actually want. Yeah. We have an act.
Well, they didn't call it the Big Brother Act for a reason.
Exactly. So they call it the Patriot Act and people cheer and wave as it's brought in. But really, that act is then used to allow government agencies not to spy on actual terrorists, but to spy on and interfere in the lives of people like you and I and hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of other normal people of European descent.
If you wouldn't mind me interjecting, so it's been my long held contention that they talk about they act as if the point of gathering all this data is then to run algorithms in order to detect terrorists before they emerge. But my point has always been, no, it's in order to create a giant database so that when they see somebody like you or me or somebody else emerge as a potential leader, then they can then go back and try to manufacture some sort of case against them. It's in order to get a giant database, not to run algorithms, but in case somebody that they want to target emerges, then they can go back and have something to target them with, or you know, something to prosecute them on.
No, I completely agree. That's exactly what they're doing, and they will be looking around now. And they do this in the UK. They have a group.
We're about to go off to break, but we'll continue this right on the other side of the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT-TODAY.
And we're back, and I'm sorry I had to interrupt you just as you were making a point about how they're targeting us with these laws, Patriot Act and whatnot.
Indeed they are. We have something in the UK called Prevent. Now, Prevent is an organisation which is meant to prevent young people from getting sucked into potential terrorism or looking up terrorist groups on the internet and getting involved in things they shouldn't. But you will actually find that Prevent has a very, very sinister sort of charter, and that is that Prevent want to tackle people who don't hold British values. They want to challenge people who don't hold British values. And that's interesting.
British values, like wearing a hijab, for instance?
Exactly.
That's a British value now.
It sounds wonderful, doesn't it? The government will be challenging people who don't hold British values. But the thing is, British values are never defined under Prevent. Prevent doesn't define British values. Well, it might do, but it doesn't define them in its opening statement. It doesn't define it in its sort of mission statement. But it does hold a very interesting interpretation of British values. And I'm sure there's loads of people who are absolutely good-meaning people who cheer on groups like Prevent, who will be like, oh, well, they're going to enforce British values. They're going to make sure all these migrants follow the British way, that they adopt British values. But that's not the case. It's not the case at all. in fact, Prevent believes British values to be tolerant, diverse, multicultural. Essentially, Prevent class British values as globo-homo. And unfortunately, that means that those who get knocks on the door by Prevent officers are often young men and women who are of European descent that have done nothing more than espouse anti-immigrant sentiment on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube. They have made comments and the police have traced it back to an individual or group of individuals and have gone round and visited them in order to try to scare them. And this isn't to try and stop them joining us. This is a way of giving people a tap on the shoulder and saying, you're being watched. We know who you are. We're watching what you do. We're monitoring your Facebook. Prevent is a very, very sinister organization. It's something that would really be far more at home in the USSR. It's something that you could imagine being part of a dystopian sci-fi novel where somebody was typing something on their tablet screen at night in their little futuristic pod, and as they click send, moments later a large knock at the door is heard, and as they get out of bed and pull on some tracksuit bottoms and press the little button to open their sort of space age door, police burst in, pin them to the floor and tell them that, they have been monitored, they have been watched, and, it's time for them to be taken down to the station for some re-education. And that's exactly what Prevent is. But again, it sounds very good, doesn't it? Prevent, making sure that everyone adopts British values. And there will be, as I said, good-meaning people cheering that on, unfortunately.
So in the United States, and Britain's not far behind on this, in the United States, we're told that we're a nation of immigrants, and we are defined by our values. And, of course, what are those values? And you said globo homo, and increasingly that is what the values are. The values certainly aren't, say, God and country, which, when I was a Boy Scout, that was what our values were supposed to be. I wish I could remember some of that Boy Scout stuff. Maybe I'll go back into my handbook and look it up. But things have changed a great deal. And then when I watch Britain, which, to the extent that it's a nation of immigrants, that arrived in, basically prehistoric times, certainly, 1,000 years ago. But if I watch, what are supposed to be historical documentaries, I see lots of black people and Indian people walking around, lots of Muslims. So it sounds as if now, with Promise, or is that what it was? Prevent. The nation of the United Kingdom, or they're defined by values, not by the people.
Yeah, by values, and these values are multicultural values, and this is where the other great lie. This is where the other great lie comes in, because this is how you can see the state working with the media. This is how you can see the two working hand in hand, and it's very, very important to look at this, because ultimately, this is why Donald Trump, this ties back to what we were saying earlier about why Donald Trump is still very much an asset for us. Because the state here in the UK is working with the media. We have a state broadcaster, the BBC, who constantly pushes the idea that Britain has always been a multiracial, multicultural melting pot. You'll see dramatizations of the tale of Robin Hood. Robin Hood and his bunch of merry multicultural men and women, riding out to do battle with the Sheriff of Nottingham, and there'll be a black Friar Tuck, there'll be an Asian maid Marian, there'll be, there's Robin, riding through the multicultural streets of medieval Nottingham to do battle with the evil white Sheriff of Nottingham. And this is quite amusing, but it's very, very damaging, actually, because young people see this and it gets into their psyche and they believe it's true. They believe it's a true representation. You know, you see this in things like Doctor Who, where he travels back in time to Victorian times, and London's, you know, as non-white back then as it is today. And you're looking at it and you're thinking, yeah, I can tell this is fiction, but normal young people won't be able to tell it's fiction. And the other issue with this is not only do they inject this into fictional recreations of history, but also factual ones too. You know, you'll watch these documentaries made for young people in cartoon form, where the invading Roman legions were all black, where the Anglo-Saxons and the Celts, you know, as they applied their face paint, you know, a number of them was black. I'm just waiting to see the black Vikings, you know, rowing over to England shores on their longboats.
Yeah, and in order to kidnap all the Paki women and take them to Iceland. Right?
And this is the thing. It's so absurd. It is absolutely so absurd that it's laughable. But to us it's laughable because we know the truth. We know the truth. And this is the thing. If you painted a cat and you painted it blue with yellow spots and pink claws, it would be funny, it would be ridiculous, it would be nonsensical, in fact. And everyone would laugh at you and say, ha-ha, why have you painted that cat blue? Cats aren't blue, they don't have yellow spots, they don't have pink claws, this is absurd. However, if you showed that to somebody who had never seen a cat, if you showed that picture to young people who'd never come into contact with a cat, it would no longer be ridiculous or stupid or far-fetched. Because they would just look at it and they would say, oh, what's that? You said that's a cat. And they would naturally assume that cats were blue with yellow spots and pink claws. And all of a sudden, that very silly picture would have a completely different context surrounding it. It would be much more sinister. And that's exactly how you should see these historical reenactments, if you can call them reenactments, because they're not really reenactments, they're historical nonsense. These historical nonsenses should be seen in the same light as the sort of analogy I just made with the cat, because these historical nonsenses are being shown to young people who actually have no other knowledge of history. Mm-hmm. And because they have no other knowledge of history, they will see black Vikings, black Celts, black Anglo-Saxons, black Roman legions marching through England's green and pleasant land, and they'll think, oh, we were always like that. That must have been how it always was. And it's a very, very powerful technique to force through this new idea of British values and to make people think that Britain was always this multicultural, multiracial nation founded on these abstract values of tolerance, equality, and multicultural, multiracial society, when in fact it wasn't. And you see this with everything, though. I mean, I did a video last year about the end of the First World War. We were 100 years on from the end of the First World War. Well, the armistice, where the guns fell silent. And that was a very interesting time, because the material being put out by groups like the British Legion, the groups who run the Poppy Appeal, which is to raise money for war memorials, veterans, and worthy causes, if you looked at their material, you would think that white men just played a bit part, a small role in the First World War, that they were people who were also there fighting alongside the women and the massed ranks of non-white colonial troops, when in fact it was completely the other way around. In fact, the overwhelming majority of soldiers, especially on the Western Front, were 99.9% recurring men. There might have been the odd female, and if there were females near the front line, they would have most likely been nurses or medics. And on the actual side of whether it was whites or non-whites, the overwhelming majority, again, were white. And yes, there were some black Americans who were in Europe, but they were generally doing things such as digging trenches. Mm-hmm. They were providing support roles. They did not fight alongside the white soldiers. It was white men that laid their lives down in their millions. But when it came to celebrating those brave and unfortunate young men who never returned home, who died in those cold, muddy fields, sinking in a swamp of mud and blood, you know, sulfur burning in their throats, we really dishonored their memory.
Mm-hmm.
We dishonored their memory this year because we are writing them out of history. And when I say we may, me, as in you and I, may not have been writing them out of history. And many people may not have been, but there was many people who will have seen these fraudulent betrayals of history. They will have known that they're fraudulent, but they will have kept their mouths shut and not said anything. I said something, you said something, we've discussed this before. But the people who knew that these retellings of history were fraudulent, many just kept their mouths shut because they're too scared to go against the grain. They're too scared to say, well, actually, this is rubbish. It was white men that gave their lives in their millions, not women, not mm-hmm. these people of color. But people are scared to say that because they don't want to get a visit from Prevent. And that is how the media and the government are working hand in hand to dispossess us from our own history,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time prosecute and persecute us if we dare speak out against that.
So I want to ask, you know, in the United States, you've got this whole movement to tear down Confederate monuments, which is now spread to monuments to racists, you know. So it could be Thomas Jefferson, it could be anybody, it could be, you know, musicians, but they were racists. We could tear down their monuments. In Britain, this begs the question. You got somebody like Mahatma Gandhi, who is revered around the world, but his platform was India for Indians. How is that different from, say, the British National Party, you know, Britain for Britons? India for Indians. And when you get down to it, when he was making his complaints, how many British were even in India? Now, the British were ruling openly. Now Britain is being ruled covertly by very anti-British elements. And, you know, when it came down to it, okay, first of all, the British never tried to demographically displace the Indians. There was never a million Britons in India. It was usually maybe a couple hundred thousand. Wasn't very many in a nation of hundreds of millions. So you're talking about usually less than 0.1% of the population. Whereas in Britain, Britain is being overrun, it is being demographically replaced by people from the subcontinent and other places. Why don't we see statues to Mahatma Gandhi being taken down?
Well, that's the interesting thing, isn't it? That's the great hypocrisy of our time, is that all people the world over can celebrate their culture, they can celebrate their race, their ethnicity, their achievements, and the world government, the ruling elite who rule our world, encourage these people to take their destiny in their own hands. And every colonial power the world over has handed back every scrap of land that they've controlled under the sort of political idea that the people who are indigenous to those lands should control those lands, that the people who are indigenous to those lands should have control over their ancestral homelands, have control over their own destiny, and have control over how they want to rule their land. However, that is not the same for Europeans. People of European descent are the only people the world over who are not allowed to take their destiny into their own hands. They're not allowed to take the path they want to. We are the only people who have these things foisted upon us. And we're also the only people that when we try to fight back against any form of colonialism or foreign invasion, we are scolded for it. In many European countries, we're actually persecuted and imprisoned for that.
Okay. And, you know, when the Europeans were at the height of their power, And they could have done otherwise, but they set up the League of Nations and tried to outlaw war. They outlawed slavery, instituted ideas, a principle of self-determination. They didn't have to. They could have doubled down and tried to ethnically cleanse all these areas under their control. And so there is a great irony that when they... And it wasn't Jews who were forcing them to try to outlaw war or whatever. I mean, this was... Or it wasn't Jews who were forcing them to ban slavery, because the slave trade was dominated to a large extent by Sephardic Jews. And so the Europeans idealistically tried to set up like a new morality for the world. They withdraw from all these areas overseas, and only to then be colonized by the rest of the world. So we're about to go off the break, but in our last segment, if you don't mind, I'd like you to weigh in on this. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party. And the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake?
And we are back. And so I asked that question about Europeans at the height of their power relinquishing their power voluntarily and now themselves being wiped out. What do you make of all that?
I think it's very interesting because Europeans, everywhere they went and colonized, they didn't do everything right. You know, I'm not saying they were, you know, absolute paragons of virtue, but on the whole, they gave far more than they took. they gave these countries irrigation, fresh running water, agriculture. They gave them healthcare. They gave them education and infrastructure. And we also did everything in our power. When I say we, I'm talking about people of European descent, did everything in their power to ensure that they stopped slavery, that they stopped things that were seen as practices that were barbaric or seen as unjust. Yet today, it's very interesting how those of European descent are painted in a historical perspective. We are painted as these colonizers, these thieves, these people who went around the world destroying culture and robbing indigenous people of their natural resources, their wealth. And we're also seen as people who perpetuated a cycle of slavery, a cycle of really horrors, and that we brought these horrors to every corner of the globe, when in fact that simply isn't true. And in fact, it is very, very disingenuous, because we were not the only people that practiced slavery. White people were not the only people to practice slavery. Slavery has been practiced the world over by every single color and every single culture.
And we weren't the main people who practiced slavery.
We weren't the main people who practiced slavery. However, we were the only people that stopped slavery. We were the only race of people who worked together as a whole to extinguish slavery, not just in our own countries, not just in our own continent, not just in Europe and in North America and Australia, but we put huge amounts of money, resources, and manpower into combating slavery the world over. Yet the way history books are now written, as if we were the ones that came up with the idea, we were the ones that perpetuated it, and we only gave up on it when there was some noble struggle by people of color to prevent us from doing it anymore, when that simply isn't the case. And in fact, if you look at the history of the British Empire did everything in its power to actually prevent African warlords and kings and rulers from carrying on the slave trade. They did everything in their power to prevent slavery all over the world, especially in Africa. And isn't it very telling that the slave trade now in Africa is alive and well? Slavery is alive and well in the Middle East. It's alive and well in the Far East. The only place where slavery has been defeated is here in the West. Yet still, we are the ones that are tarnished with the brush of slavery. And when you factor in, or when you tie this in with everything we've said earlier, you can see there is a concerted effort, not just by the media, but also by the establishment, to tell an absolutely misleading account of history in order to not only make young whites feel as if they don't have a homeland and don't have a place in the world and they don't have an ancestral claim to their lands, but also to make these young whites hate themselves and despise their own ancestors.
Well, thank you very much for that. That's all the time we have for today, but those are certainly words of wisdom. And we look forward to your show on Wednesday. Who's going to be your guest this week?
Our guest this week is Morgoth from Morgoth's Review, so I'm very much looking forward to that.
I am too. That'll be Wednesday on the Mark Collett YouTube channel, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.